Welcome everyone to the 2019 Tour de France wrap-up show, and it is Fendringcast 124. Thank you very much for sticking with us during the race. We hope that you were able to get our updates from the team car, and you've enjoyed the race. It's been a fascinating last few days of the race. But not probably the ending that we were looking for when we spoke this time last week, and we were considering a French winner as a strong possibility. We talked about Thibaut Pinot and Julian Alaphilippe as the best of the best, really, in terms of the French challenge. And the only one of them that we kind of didn't mention was Romain Bardet, who we said had won the Tour de France back at the start. Brilliant, well done. I'll hang my head in shame for that. In fact, Ben Bardet, it transpires, is the only one of that French like core of riders who ends up winning something, and he won the King of the Mountains. So do we kind of half get a point for that? We'll take it. If we do, we'll take it. So last time we did speak, we were talking just after the rest day and just as the race hit the Alps for the final period. And it's fair to say that as much as the Tour de France hit the Alps this year, the Alps hit back quite hard, with the selection of weather probably more suited to the winter sports season. I think anyone who witnessed it will forget those images of the hail, the sludge, the snow ploughs being used to try and move them on. And of course the now infamous Norwegian TV crew mudslide footage with them running to get out of the way as a valley side sort of collapsed into their path. It kind of added to the drama and excitement, I suppose, of the tour, because it's certainly a couple of days that we all, you know, those of us big tour fans who've watched it for years and years won't necessarily forget that in a hurry. It was 1996, the last kind of truncated stage for the weather that I remember, and that was for a lot of snow. And it left, of all people, Bjarne Riis in a position to go on and win the tour, whatever happened to him. So it's difficult to kind of know the outcome on the race. Everyone had their speculation, everyone had their opinions, everyone, I think, maybe felt that Egan Bernal was going to end up winning the tour anyway, and I'd probably share that viewpoint, to be fair. But you know, of course, now we'll never know, and we'll never, of course, know whether Alaphilippe could have got back on the descent of the Isérom, how close he would have gone to getting back, how much time he would have lost, you know, and if any of the other riders would have lost time. Was Geraint Thomas hanging on? Was Kruiswijk hanging on? All of those things now, I suppose, are factors that will remain, you know, unclarified, I suppose. What it did mean, of course, was that there was no stage win for Egan Bernal in winning the Tour de France, which is a shame, because I think people always talk about the panache of a Tour de France winner. I remember the stick Greg LeMond got in 1990 for not winning a stage, or a road race stage, or an individual stage. So whether he would have gone on to win that Alpine stage, or whether the deal would have been that if Simon Yates helped him get away and win the Tour, he'd have let Yates win the stage, I suspect that's probably what would have happened. And so we went on to the Saturday with kind of like an unsatisfactory, but you know, it was the right outcome to stop the stage. I've heard people, you know, even Bradley Wiggins saying at the time, I'd have raced them through it. I think that was probably said with an element of irony, because there was certainly no way that they were getting through that and the landslide. And then, of course, Saturday, it was equally as disappointing when the stage was reduced to, you know, less than 40 km, and one climb, direct route from start to finish, and it almost felt like there was kind of like an anti-climax in a way. And as soon as Julian Alaphilippe went out the back, you know, something I think we'd all been expecting and predicting, and as I said on the previous show, I think I'd kind of had a small bet with my wife that he'd be at least 20 minutes down by Paris, and you know, he might this is here comes my excuse. He might well have been, had the circumstances of Saturday and Friday been different and the race has been allowed to run their course, he might well have finished down the order more. So it doesn't matter now. It is what it is, to use the Tour de France and Love Island phrase of the summer. So Alaphilippe then disappeared from the top group, and that left your final podium as Bernal, Thomas and Kruijswijk, which I think is probably a fair, you know, fair reflection on the 3 weeks. You can say that Kruijswijk didn't really do a great amount, but his team got him into the position where he didn't really need to be honest. And I think the podium was the limit of his ambitions, and I think he successfully navigated the tour to get there. Fourth place probably, hopefully, is an indicator for the future in Emmanuel Buchmann, who rode really well from start to finish, and far from being, you know, the sort of rider that's happy to finish in the top four or five but never sees their nose never sees the front of the race during the whole 3 weeks. He was keen to you know, throw a few attacks down and certainly drive some groups that he was in, and fair play to him. You know, you hope that I think it might take a slightly flatter Tour de France for him. I think he might be more of a Bradley Wiggins than an Egan Bernal, but you know, he's certainly strong, he's got a reasonable time trial in him, and fingers crossed he can continue to develop, because your theory and your feeling is that the Bora Hansgrohe team can't just continually rely on Peter Sagan to get them a stage win and the green jersey, because much as that is one of the few jerseys on offer, and it's an achievement to get that jersey, it's still, you know, still one of the three competitions, but he's still got a bigger or the team have got a bigger opportunity with the Buchmanns and the Conrads and Mulbergers and people like that, and even Lucas Postelberger. So they can excel on all terrain, and they probably will going forward. As I think, moving from the yellow jersey to the green jersey, I don't think this will go down in history as Peter Sagan's best tour. It's not been his best season. Wasn't quite on it in the classics. Hasn't been on it in the Tour de France. He'd done enough to win a stage, which was great for him. But you know, those days of dominating stages, the flat stages, those mini mountain stages, he's not going to be allowed necessarily to get in a break nowadays. And with that in mind, he you know, his opportunities to win bike races are limited, and that's a shame, because, you know, a rider, probably the outstanding one day and medium mountain rider of his generation, may be starting to crest the hill. You never know. I hope not. I hope there's another classic win, a Flanders, a Roubaix in there for him, but we'll have to wait and see. It certainly hasn't worked him basing his season around all the classics and trying to run through Flèche Wallonne and Liège-Bastogne-Liège and the Tour of California, that is for sure. He didn't quite make the age start anyway, did he? But it sounds like it's a frustrating time for him. So Buchmann, getting back to him, good times for him, and hopefully we can see Bora expand their repertoire and do a bit more. So the green jersey, as we've mentioned, Peter Sagan, not really anything else to add to that. It wasn't really much of a battle. I think Trentin and Viviani, Michael Matthews had small nibbles. Not much outside of that, to be honest. The white jersey, for that, read the yellow jersey. Bernal, justifiably the winner, the strongest in the closing days of the race. And Romain Bardet, we touched on at the start, winning the Maillot Poitou King of the Mountains. And again, there's people saying, well, you know, that's great, but he didn't look like winning a stage. He only won one super category mountain. And, you know, if Bernal had been given the stage win, if it had run its course to the penultimate day or the penultimate racing day, he would have been able to or would have taken that jersey. But, you know, that's not Bardet's fault. And so he is a deserved winner and the only Frenchman to win a jersey in the Tour. So fair play to him for that. And when you look at how his Tour started, how the team time trial went, how the Planche de Belfi went back in the first week, when he was the first favourite to solo attack out the back, you have to say that for him to recover his morale, his motivation, to get his act together, and to be in a position to win that jersey, that shows pretty good character. And people will say, well, you know, he was only allowed in all those breaks in the final week of the tour because, you know, he was that far behind. That's irrelevant. He still had to have the legs to get there, stay there, and to get over the climb. So, well done him. And he wins the consolation prize after we tipped him to win the race, I suppose. In terms of people who we did tip to do well in competitions, we've talked about Romain Bardet a lot. We also need to mention Nairo Quintana, who seemed to be battling all the other riders in the Tour de France and his team at times. He managed to secure a really good stage win in terrible conditions, the first of the terrible conditions in the Alps. So with that in mind, people felt almost that he'd closed 4 minutes off his deficit and that he might be a factor in the final weekend. But clearly that stage win was the limit of his action, of his ability in this race. And we saw him battling to be the best Movistar rider, and he got over Mikel Landa at the end. Movistar with three riders in the top 10 of the race, they can be relatively pleased. They got the stage win for Nairo Quintana, but aside from that, it was a pretty ropey tour for them, and I don't think that in terms of leadership they're any nearer knowing what the heck's going on there. If Carapaz is going to Ineos, if Quintana's going to Arkea Samsic, if Mikel Landa's going to Bahrain Merida, and Valverde is going to ride on into his late 60s, then I don't see where they're going to win a Grand Tour next year. Marc Soler seems to have fitted more into the role of domestique than team leader, and unless there's something, you know, in the pipeline or in the bag that they're thinking of, I think that we could be seeing a different sort of style of racing for them. Maybe they'll go more the Mitchelton-Scott route and look to, you know, use rouleurs and maybe try and disrupt the race in different ways on different terrains. I suppose you can't quite call them the flop of the race. I'd have to say Adam Yates, probably his GC challenge was pretty bad, and he was very lucky that Trentin and his brother were there to save the race for Mitchelton Scott, because if it had been all on Adam, I think it would have been a pretty bad race for them. Another team that really kind of struggled were Sunweb. As soon as there were problems with Dumoulin getting to the start line and Sam Oomans out for the season, Kelderman didn't last too long. I think once Michael Matthews realised that he probably hadn't got the legs on many of the sprinters, he kind of half turned his attention to the green jersey, but didn't necessarily seem to want to commit too much to the mid-stage sprints for points. He just kind of fell away at the end, and I think for Sunweb they were very lucky that Nicholas Roach was in a fair few breakaways to get their jersey on the TV, because if not, they would have been probably the most anonymous team in the race alongside Dimension Data. You could also put CCC in there in terms of teams that had a really bad tour. They didn't cover themselves in too much glory. Van Avermaet got in a few early breaks, DeMarchi as well, till he had his accident and was out. But they did start coming on strong towards the end, and Simon Geschke got in one of the, you know, the Alpine breakaways. So hopefully there's a bit of promise for them, and you feel that maybe the more relaxed ambience of the Vuelta, they might get some riders fit and get some stage wins that they kind of need to take on the next level. And you know, they're a team that was thrown together at the 11th hour last season, so fair play to them for that. I don't hold too much against them, but they can't rely just solely on GVA all the time. In terms of teams that kind of overachieved compared to the ones that underachieved, I think you'd have to say Wanty overachieved. The publicity from Alfredo going, you know, doing it tough in the first week, being out the back, Javier Maurice being close to the top 20 and being in contention in the King of the Mountains a fair few times, that's done them the world of good, which is nice to see. would you say Ineos have overachieved? That's a difficult question because, you know, the record books don't show a stage win, and all right, they won the race, but they always do. They didn't win the team time trial, which kind of leads me on to probably the biggest overachieving team would be Jumbo, who won stages. They won three different, had three different stage winners in terms of Groenewegen, Van Aert and Tønnesen. That was just in the sprints. They also won the team time trial by quite some distance, and they also had the third spot on the podium with Stephen Crowswaite. So you would have to say that in terms of teams, they were the one, really, the team that probably got the most publicity and won the most in the tour. So well done to them. All without, you know, Primoz Roglic, and all without Wout van Aert for half of the race after he crashed out. What about the French teams then? What would you say about the French? Agir Désert, Le Mondial, got a jersey but no stage win, and, you know, Oliver Naarsen didn't really do much in the medium mountain stages. They certainly missed Pierre Latour. Total Direct Energy, apart from a couple of no-hoper attacks from Lilian Calmejean, who's got more class than that, and hopefully will come back and be better than that in the years to come, because he's shown he has been. Apart from that, they were fairly anonymous. And again, once Terpstra was down and out, their tour was pretty much over. But again, they can't just rely on Nicky Terpstra. So, you know, hopefully there's some ways of some change coming in their way. Same with Arkea Samsic. Greipel somehow competed in the final stage on the Champs-Élysées and got a top six. Other than that, he was out of all the sprints. Warren Barguil and Elie Gesbert did okay getting into breakaways. Barguil kind of more suicide than by design. Elie Gesbert hopefully is a star in the making. I think we're big fans of how he rides. And that takes you to Francais du Jour, Groupama, who, if you'd have taken the first 2 weeks, they had stage win, they had a guy in position to try and win the tour. Of course, they had the crosswind drama, but it looked like that wasn't an insurmountable problem. So I would say they're probably the best of the bunch in terms of the French. So there is our briefest of brief wrap-ups from the tour. We'll be back pre-Vuelta and for some of the other races in the season. In the meantime, thanks very much for listening to episode 124, and we'll speak again soon.